Why isn't that working? It begins in one or three, two.
I've been dreaming about salmon patties all day long.
There are any seatbelts in these things? This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 119. My name is Scott Johnson, and joining me tonight, Brian, there's a hobo on the tracks, Dunaway.
Nice. Leonard, you dern sling blade talking fool. Twerin' asleep, twerin' a diabetes coma. Now give me some more of that 7-Eleven beer and store meat you borrowed. That's right, Leonard. Opens at 7 and closes at 11.
You're describing my favorite thing about this movie. Also right? With us, Randy. Uh-oh, Kevin Bacon has a black friend and a boom box. Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian, this week's movie continuously reminded me of one of my favorite deep thoughts by Jack Handy, in which he said, quote, "When I die, I want to go peacefully like my grandfather did in his sleep. Not screaming like the passengers in his car," end quote. What I'm saying is, this movie made me pine for the sweet release of death. Wait. Not my death, mind you. I'm talking about desperately wishing the characters would kill each other. You see, you'll watch this movie, and you'll see for yourself. The reason you've never heard of it? They all lived. They all lived to the end of a piece of crap. But if they killed each other, order up the Oscars.
Right?
Well, they had their chance.
They almost did.
Yeah. Almost happened. Yeah. That was a weird turn.
Yeah.
Finally, Brian, gas station attendant eating an Oreo Ibbit.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of these United States of America. One beer, which Kevin Bacon does know how to pour, liberty and bar fight drum solos for all. Oh, damn, there's a lot of big words.
Yeah.
I wish almost started mine the same way.
I wish we arranged our greetings, because it would have been fun for you to actually not know the Pledge of Allegiance and have us sit here and try to help you. Right.
I'm here to tell you.
United States of America.
I'm here to tell you one of my favorite Film Sack characters ever is now officially Leo Pickett, as portrayed by Levon Helm.
Right.
Who died. Yeah, died this April, just a couple months ago or a month ago. Yeah. Of it doesn't say what he died of, but he's died at age 71.
Died of latent disappointment.
Mm. Well, I thought he was great.
Died of a broken heart.
The movie we're talking about is called End of the Line, and we'll get into what we think about it in a second. But first, as always, and as is tradition here on the fine show called Film Sack, we let Scott Fletcher have his take. Scott Fletcher, take it away.
End of the line. Two railroad workers from Clifford, Arkansas, become heroes when they hijack a locomotive to protest the closing of the local railroad company. The two set out on a rollicking cross-country adventure to restore the dignity, pride, and jobs of the small-town citizens. The all-star cast includes Wilford Brimley,
diabetes,
Kevin Bacon, Bob Balaban, Barbara Bari, Levon Helm, Holly Hunter, and Mary Steenburgen.
And we're back. Thank you, Scott Fletcher. That was amazing, I think. Or maybe, oh, what a terrible thing you did. Or what are all the ranges of emotions we should show?
It was either the best or worst ever. And
on paper, this film has something to offer. Like, you read a description of this movie and you're like, wow, how have I never heard of this? I mean, it's got Wilford Brimley in it. I'll bet Scott Johnson will like it.
That gets me excited on a couple of levels, but... Never heard of this thing. End of the Line, totally new, 1987. Yeah. No idea it came out. Quiet little film, or at least about half of it is. Right. And then it turns into zany, freaking bad.
Zany.
Well, a little zany, you know.
Oh,
gets when real
they,
zany
when they get to shit taco
with a bunch of extra Z's,
right? With a
zany.
But I will. I'm gonna say, and when I sent you guys that email, I sent an email yesterday that said, "You guys, I kind of am charmed by this movie," and that was right around the time that they were on the train heading to Chicago, and then it got weird.
It did.
And you had you yet to, when you sent us that email, had you yet to get far enough down the train tracks that you started asking plot hole questions? Like, how are they doing this?
Yeah. Right? That's when it started to happen. I was like,
they just destroyed police property. How are they being allowed to continue? Yeah. Like,
you know, even if you have a big guy up top who goes, yes, okay, I'll take care of it, that's not happening.
Yeah. And in end of the line universe, if you run through a cop, and split the car quite literally in two.
Right.
It's only at these crossroad points that you can get in trouble, apparently. The rest of the right. way, yeah. you can just you sit can back just, and relax.
Just park the train, go out, you know.
Build a campfire, get
build
drunk.
Build a campfire, attempt to shoot each other with shotguns in the worst attempt of a simultaneous suicide. Yeah.
Right, but to answer your question, Randy, yes, the plot hole started to become pretty apparent, and it also started to get real Keystone copy for a while there, and the music got dumb. But up till then, it was this. I thought anyway, was this kind of quiet, character driven, Southern speed kind of story about these, you know, about Arkansas and about these guys who work the railroad there, and they're simple. And they've got, you know, all the right intentions, and there's a sweetness about it, and there's some good acting going on all around the place, I think. And you have some good actors who were working at the time. And it's a nice little character piece with all the right pieces for me. And I like this kind of stuff. It's your Driving Miss Daisy. It's your rotten or your,
wow,
it's your
no,
fried
stop.
Green tomatoes. It's your
I think stop. the big there. Comparison is The Straight Story, I think.
Yeah, that's a good example too.
Okay, thank you. You just started naming Oscar-winning films, and that was my whole point in my greeting, like that you just started comparing, you know, Britney Spears to Mozart.
No, no, no,
just,
no, no. That is no. not what I'm doing. I'm it's saying
the first part. Of
the I'm film. Not saying the movie equals the actors or equals the end result or any of that. Driving Miss Daisy is one of the best movies I've ever seen. I love that movie. But what I like about it is the Southern sensibilities. And part of it is my wife's family and the time I spent in the South. I spent 2 years in Mississippi. There's a thing about the Deep South that's difficult to capture. And when even a piece of it or the essence of it is caught on film, I really get into it. I like the speed of it. And
this film actually reads on paper. Like if you were to sit and read this script, I think it reads like it was written by someone who's really, really sympathetic to this concept of living in rural Arkansas and losing your job and trying to figure out what to do and the race relations and the familial relations and all that. Definitely very sympathetic. They just weren't it wasn't a literate human being who knew anything about how how the world actually works and had to start playing Mad Libs with the script later. You know, what do we have them? What do we have? Oh, look, he wrote a TV commercial. We're going to have him shoehorned into a TV commercial. Oh, that's hysterical.
All right. Fair enough. But like, so the dude from all the Christopher Guest movies.
Taliban.
And he's rolling around with Clint Howard, right?
Right.
Fat Clint Howard, by the way.
Chubby. I wouldn't call him fat. Chubby.
Just different than I'm used to, I guess. He looked like he did in his babyface Star Trek days. Remember that when he was a little kid in that? What a weird episode. If you guys have not seen the Star Trek episode with Clint Howard in it, you owe it to yourself, because didn't they dubbed him over with some crazy voice? Still haunts me to this day. But anyway,
I'll tell you what, somebody convinced Bob Balaban to do a crazy voice. His voice was three octaves higher than usual.
Right. And had the North Dakota / Chicago / you know, oh yeah, well this will be a really bad PR for us if we don't get this going. But we take care of our own, you know.
He was Gerber, right?
Gerber.
He was Gerber.
All right.
That's right.
Gerber.
And to me, that was really when they introduced his character, that was when the train first went off the track for me for this movie. up until then, it was very, like we talked about, it, you know, there's been many times in our history in America, especially where we've like, just, you know, industry just failed and industry fails completely. And you have all these workers who are out of work and there's really no place for them to go. Mm-hmm. And so there was a really mean, bad overtone going on here. And then all of a sudden they introduce his character and he's just so silly and over the top. You're like, there's just no way where this is going to end badly. This is going to be just silly
Yeah.
for the rest of the show. And it was.
Listen to this weird trip for the director. This director's name is Jay Russell, and he went from his first film, End of the Line, first directorial debut was End of the Line, this movie. He then went on to do something called, some TV miniseries called Great Drives, a documentary in 96. So almost 10 years later, he picks up the director's chair again. And then in 2000, he starts a string of what many people think are pretty good movies. He goes, My Dog Skip. He goes, Tuck Everlasting. He does Ladder 49, which, whatever, you could argue about that one. The Water Horse and something new he's working on now called Wake the Dead. Who knows what that decade was for? But I, in my head, you know, maybe he was
he
directed community theater for a decade.
Finally came back, and now he seems like he's doing all right.
Actually, his first job was directing parks and tourism commercials for the state of Arkansas.
Shut up. Are you lying?
I'm not lying.
Oh, weird. That's really weird.
Where his boss was Bill Clinton, as a matter of fact.
Tuck Everlasting. Do you guys remember this? I remember that.
I remember the name.
Yeah, it was some kind of like Twilight Before Twilight kind of idea. Anyway, so that guy's legacy, and I think it's interesting. Bill Clinton was given credit, a thanks credit in the credits. I noticed this as it was rolling by. Yes, I stayed for the credits. as most of the production was shot in location in his home state, he was, of course, their longtime family friends of fellow Arkansan Mary Steenburgen.
Right, I'm going to say Mary Steenburgen,
who I don't like looking at. Can we get it? Let's get this out of the way. Yep. So
really, I love looking at her.
Have had an issue with her weird face. Something about her.
Love her.
Oh, I remember she was super, super cute in Time After Time, the Jack the Ripper versus H.G. Wells movie. Oh,
right.
That's an oldie, but a goodie.
That is an oldie. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Ted Danson's wife still, right? Aren't they still a thing? Yeah.
I'm going to go opposite. I'm going to say I think she's still beautiful. I think she's always been beautiful. Love her.
I don't know, dude. There's something about her that makes me... like a teacher or something, like a third grade teacher.
A hot teacher who I'd like to
sit
around and take some.
Are you saying she's a TILF, Brian?
What's a spray PG? Yes, so she's a TILF.
TILF.
There's a nice part of how this film was constructed around Mary Steenburgen and Holly Hunter, and that is it didn't have to have them. This film could have easily. Yeah, but I'm still saying this film could have easily been about these, you know, workers who were all male and all worked at the train yard and lost their jobs and went to the bar and so forth. And it at the very least indulged a bit in what was going on back home when they go on their adventure.
Yeah. And I thought that was I gotta have a baby. This is like the same year for Holly Hunter.
Yeah, same as
Raising Arizona.
Raising Arizona. Yeah.
Shut up, Alvin.
They're the ones responsible for getting him in trouble too. Yeah, our husbands just took off with the train. Oh, really? Oh, okay. Well, I'll put out an APB on him. Oh, crap. Maybe we shouldn't have gone straight to the police with this.
Yeah. Totally
interrupted Randy there.
Especially given that the police don't know how to stop them.
Right?
Like, so weird.
Yeah. Choking to death over here. So Holly Hunter's great though. Can we say that?
I think they were both fantastic. Yeah. I thought they were probably the highlights of the movie.
A lot and less again, bacon than I expected. That was one thing that weirded me out. There was hardly any Kevin Bacon in this movie.
Yeah, he was all over the movie poster.
Yeah.
Getting to my point about how to fix the movie, there's a scene fairly early on where Kevin Bacon is in a tumultuous homoerotic friendship with his buddy that he wants to... that he wants to beat up.
Third watch guy. Remember that, Brian Dunaway? You were a third watch fan. Yeah.
Ends up falling asleep in the car, you know, like you do. Yeah. I mean, you do. Right? Brian Dunaway, back me up here. You do that, you know?
Sure.
That's what you do in the South. We fall asleep in our Iraq, whatever you want to get.
Right. So she ends up, Holly Hunter, you know, is like his fiance. I don't know what she is.
She's used to be married, and they're gonna get
remarried. Exactly. Remarried,
it's nice that she's in the film, but it's not really that important that you understand what she is. But she shows up and she starts beating the crap out of him through an open car window. And again, all I'm saying is, movie is so much better if she accidentally murders him right there.
Right, and it wouldn't have mattered. It really wouldn't have, because that was pretty much the last we saw of him anyway, wasn't it? When they
right?
No, he comes up and Yeah, around at the end. At the end of the film, there's a return to Kevin Bacon because they paid for Kevin Bacon.
Right. If you're gonna pay for bacon, you're gonna use the bacon.
That's right.
Right.
So I wanna the new term for a movie where if we ever watch a film sack movie in the future where at some point some people call it jumping the shark or the point where the movie takes a turn that was a mistake and they never get back to what made the movie possibly good. We're gonna call that a
Gerber.
There, that's a Gerber.
Right. A Gerber.
So anytime that happens, that movie totally pulled a Gerber, second half. I can't stop coughing.
Oh my gosh, Scott Johnson.
Hold on. Oh man. Yeah. So there's
okay there, buddy?
There's that. Yeah, I'm good. Holly Hunter. I think she's hot. That's one thing I just want to get.
Really? It's funny because you think Holly Hunter's hot, and I think she's got like this weird quality that I don't like.
Really? See, yeah, backwards. It's Steenburgen you should have the trouble with.
Yeah. I don't know.
I bet there's a sandwich in some Hollywood sandwich shop called the Steenburgen, by the way.
It's the Steenburgen.
What do you bet?
I would like to go find
corned
out
beef
right now
with pickles and Swiss cheese, Thousand Island dressing.
We're recording this on a day off for me. I'm driving up to LA.
Yeah, go, dude. Get a Steenburgen and review it. Take a picture and let us know what that's like.
You know what's sad for old Wilford Brimley? I mean, if you go to IMDb,
but go ahead.
It's an order of a in credit order. I don't know, man. He's not listed like to like what, sixth or seventh.
Yeah, it's a weird listing on that movie. The movie's got kind of a busted up. I don't know if it's
alphabetical. I thought IMDb had them in alphabetical order.
Well, I thought that too.
I think it depends on the film. I think if the film did it in alphabetical, they do it in alphabetical.
Yeah.
I think.
And it's weird because I prefer it when they top bill people. I don't like when they go alphabetic.
Yeah, you'd like to know what extra got paid more than Holly
Hunter. Who do they consider to be the big stars of this film?
Right.
Yeah, see,
I think they probably did. They said, you know what? We could do this alphabetically or we could do it by popularity. Either way, Kevin Bacon comes first.
Yeah, so. Either way. That's why Bacon. That's why he changed his name to be that. Actually, I don't know if that's true, but you're right. This is alphabetical. Bacon, Balaban, Barry, Beach. Oh, by the way, Barbara Barry. I used to really like her when I was younger.
Barbara Barry.
Very great mother type actress who did all.
Holly Hunter was almost not in the film because her last name doesn't start with the letter B.
Right. And like Leo, he's way down at the bottom here. It's freaking Levon Helm, who would like to remind you folks, this right here.
Peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah, peanut butter jelly time. Give me some jelly.
What a baseball bat.
It's healthy. Oh, my gosh.
It is indeed.
It is. Yeah. In 1987, it was healthy. That's another thing. Well, we've got to keep this film in its place.
Yeah. Well, the guy next to him was eating a whole bucket of KFC by himself. So I guess, relatively speaking, pretty healthy.
I love that stuff. This is the part of the movie. You guys are just talking about the part of the movie where I was totally charmed by it. And I was really excited. I sat down and go, oh, this looks good. It feels good. It sounds good. The music's not too outdated at this point of the film. Like, so far, I'm getting this nice little independent, quiet little piece I want.
Right.
And then Gerber.
And then Gerber.
And I was nothing. Listen, Balaban, I like that guy, but this is the wrong, wrong movie to do it in.
Right.
We'll talk about some of those tropes coming up, but I do else have a. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say when there's something really gone wrong with your character when Clint Howard is overacting and somehow does a better job than you.
Yeah.
You know, and the bad thing about this, I think the part this failed the most on was you really need a really bad guy in this movie to really heighten the tension, and there's none of that. I mean, every once in a while you think, oh, Clint Howard, he's gonna do something, he's looking evil, he's gonna do something evil. Never does anything evil.
He just wants to direct a commercial. That's
right?
All he wants. That I really wish they'd all sat down before filming and said, okay, so what does all the characters want?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And you know, like what do these dogs want? Well, the dogs wanted to get fed.
And eat Mary Steenburgen.
Yeah, that's all the dogs wanted. They were hungry.
Yeah.
Right. See, why didn't anybody notice this?
They wanted
just feed the dogs
as well.
How much do you feed those dogs? I don't know.
I thought it was going to be a commentary on that too. Like he's spending all his money on the dogs, and it just ended up being a conversation. I'm like, all right.
Well, at the end, it was all set up for the final joke where he's hugging her. He's glad to be home. It's good to be home. How are my dogs doing? And then she's like, don't, because she let him out. Right.
Yeah.
Right. That was the whole lead up for the dog bit.
Ironically, they got hit by a train.
They were trying to eat a hobo.
That tasty, tasty hobo.
Right.
So anybody else have a serious twinge of nostalgia? At least I did for the rat t-shirt that Bacon wore through the whole movie. So,
I had nostalgia for all of that. All of that. Round like everything. I, I wanted to spend some time just living his life.
Yeah, that was great. That car and just the boombox and the black friend. Just
kidding. By some time, by the way, I mean like 2 hours.
Yeah. Well, of course. Yeah. So Clint Howard, do you think he fattened up for the role, or is this just
he went through a period where he was a little bit heavier, and nothing wrong with that. He's creepy when he's really skinny, but we're used to seeing him like that.
Yeah, he's less comedic when he's skinny,
right?
And then when he's kind of round headed and weird looking, like in Apollo 13,
right?
He's kind of when he was not too fat but got super round head. He's still kind of creepy.
I think that was perfect. That was actually a perfect role for him, and I think that was probably my favorite Clint Howard role.
Wasn't he in that Jurassic Park chicken ripoff? What was that called? Carnosaur. Where a chicken became a dinosaur or something like that.
I have no idea. I know what you're talking about, but I never watched it to see if it was in there.
Well, it was one of those things.
If that thing exists, why the hell haven't we watched it?
Oh, it does. Right. I know it exists. I just don't remember if he's in it. I think Carnosaur is. It was one of those things where Hollywood comes out with a huge movie like Jurassic Park, and then the next day you find out some direct-to-DVD thing is called Jurassic Snark or something.
Right. It's called a Grandma Fooler, and what it does basically is all the kids ask Grandma for a certain movie, and Grandma goes picks it up because she thinks that's what it is.
Yeah. Like there's plenty of examples of this. Transformers. Yeah. There's another one called
GoBots.
No. Like a more genuine ripoff of it. And it happens almost with every major
Transmorgifiers.
Thing. Yeah. It's something like that. And Battlefield LA,
of Los Angeles is actually the film you're trying to think of.
That's the one. And there's another one called
Battle of Los Angeles. You're just talking about Asylum films.
Right. Yes. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Right. Pretty sure Carnosaur. Let's find out.
I know Carnosaur. I've actually saw it, at the Blockbuster, and had thought about getting it, but I don't know, man.
There it is, Carnosaur 1993, and I just want to see who's in it. So here's a case where they don't go alphabetic; they do it by popularity of actress. Diane Ladd was in that. Jeez,
how do you even spell Carnosaur? I'm not spelling it right.
There it is, Clint Howard. I knew it. Clint Howard's in that. So
I think there could be a fun game where you name Asylum films and then try to figure out what they were a ripoff of. Like some of them are easy, like the Da Vinci Treasure. That's easy. The one you're trying to figure out and remember is Transmorphers.
Well, that's it.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, Transmorphers. That was it. That was it.
Then there's also Transmorphers: Fall of Man.
Yeah.
There's light of the sun.
Carnosaur, just so you know, a genetically manipulated and very hungry dinosaur escapes from a bioengineering company and wreaks havoc on a local desert town. I'm in!
I love that he's very hungry.
Yeah, very hungry. But I swear it was like a chicken it was like a chicken.
Well, it makes sense because they're supposed to be birds, right? So it absolutely makes sense. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't remember.
Clint Howard is the highest star on, well, I guess Diane Ladd, but you look down the list and you can't name any of these other people.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it's awesome. He should be doing those things.
Yes.
Let's see. Okay. You talked earlier about the plot holes. Could you just take your renegade train that you technically stolen? They were adamant that they didn't steal it, but they freaking stole it. Could you just park it and have a campfire all night and not have anyone notice that you're shooting each other on the tracks?
Bothers me so bad. You can't just take a
anyone else use these tracks?
Exactly.
Right.
Right. You can't pull it over to the side. It's like you just stop it on the thing.
They intimated that it was a somewhat private line.
Yeah.
Right.
And that the line itself had been shut down. That was like the point of the film is that the company has decided to do something that no company has ever done in the history of transport. And as a result, you just don't have anybody else using this line, which is ridiculous. The cost of installing and maintaining a railway is way higher than one company is going to be able to just monopolize at all times.
Oh, of course. And at the end, when he bought, spoiler alert, but he bought the train yard essentially for a dollar from the old man. It's such a trope, that whole mess. But anyway, how he ended up with the thing. All I could think in my head was, if you could park on that all night and sleep out there by your campfire,
right,
and nobody else needed the tracks, you are in a dead business, my friend. Like, there's no that is a sign that you just paid. If that cost you a dollar, you may have paid too much. You should sell that land and
no bad guy. I mean, even the guy who was trying to kick them all out at the end, he was just trying to give some friendly advice. It's like, hey, you're not going to make any money. Just get out.
Gerber. Yeah. He just, in the end, Gerber, yeah. As much as Gerber was, you know, this whiny kind of, Gerber. In fact, that ended weird. Like normally in most of your movies, you're that mm-hmm. character, like in 9 to 5, for example, he gets humiliated and.
Or Dabney Coleman. Yeah.
Yeah. What'd I say? The character.
No, that was it. You said the character.
Yeah. So he just walks off and gives advice and then leaves. That was weird. Like, I don't know what happened. You had a perfectly good little character piece for an hour, and then you blew it. And then it turned into, I had a weird Stripes vibe at one point. I can't explain it. But like they had the train on the big slider thing and it was coming in, they had the bands playing and the balloons and they were going to greet the hobo.
Yeah. And they all come out and they're marching.
There was a weird Stripes vibe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's wrong. It's wrong for the movie. And the music also got real dumb. Like it got Ghostbusters chase music for the latter half of the film. And the first half of the film kind of had this nice banjo-y Southern whatever. And it really sank deep into what I love about these movies set in the South, which is really just the language. It's why I think I love Western so much. It's not even about the action of Westerns or the mythology of what a Western is, but it's the way everybody talks to each other. And there was a lot of that early on. Then they got to the big city. I don't know what's going on here in the big city.
Exactly.
From a long way, we'd really like to talk to the president of the company.
The big plot hole for me is that after they've been on the road for a day, after they've been out of town and the police have been notified, the police get a hold of some other police up the tracks and have them try to stop the train. Yeah. And so they park a police car on the train. And there's two things that happen right there. One, you find out that your nice old man who just wants his job back is actually psychotic.
Yeah, right.
And that was just that was too much for the film. I didn't feel like the film could hold up that he would choose to drive his train right over these policemen. I mean, I realize you're going to say there's an assumption that the police will jump out of the way, but no, this is like attempted murder of a police officer. and then two, they bust through a police car. They don't show that, which was really disappointing.
Yeah.
That's where the film let me down and left me there. Because instead of showing it, I'm not even sure they were showing the train in motion. They may have just been showing the camera in motion. I'm not sure. Yeah. But they didn't show it hit the car. And then, for whatever reason, the police don't go out of their mind, start calling state police, start calling the FBI. I realize it's 25 years ago. Still, 25 years ago, this train wouldn't have made it another 5 miles.
Yeah,
there are plenty of ways to stop trains on tracks, and they would have gone out of their minds to stop that train.
Yeah, and then so if they didn't let you down enough there, where they let me down even more, I kind of could go, I could get a little bit of, you know, Smokey and the Bandit and just suck it up and deal with what happened there. Where they really lost me is the murder-suicide attempt on the side of the tracks.
Yeah.
It's like, you've gone this far, nothing's really changed. Nothing had changed at that point. There were no major alterations in the plan. They hadn't been foiled too much. Like, they were still going. They still had the motivation. And now they're just going to go shoot each other with guns and end it all. And first of all, nobody's after you. So there's no motivation there. It's not like, oh, the police are surrounding us and they're going to kill us anyway. So let's do this, Leo. Like, none of that existed. It was just, let's be stupid and shoot each other. That's where it lost me. That's where I started going, this is funky. Where are we going with this? Because up to that point, I was all right with it.
I think it was all in the same time frame. Same way with me. I thought it was going to go in a very depressing movie up until that point, and I thought they were going to. I actually really did think that Brimley was dead when Leo was talking to him on the train, and he was, you know, he wasn't talking back. I was honestly thinking, okay, he's dead now. Leo, who is not the brightest person in the world, is going to have to finish this quest on his own because of, you know, Brimley's sacrifice.
Right. But
Mr. Haney sacrifice, and I thought it was going to be, that movie.
It didn't become that either. And you know what? I want my own Leo. I don't have a problem admitting that. I want one to have around. I love that kind of innocent adult who just, life is simple. It's peanut butter and jelly and throwing a baseball against the side of a building and, you know, life is simple and clean.
You want me to dress up as a pilot? Sure, I'll do that. Whatever.
I like that. I want that guy in my life. I think that's okay. to sort of desire that. The real villain of this movie, however, is
diabetes.
Don't forget, that's the clear villain. But nothing wrong with Leo is all I'm getting at. He's a sweet little soul, a fine character, played real good by that dude.
Played real good.
And I think he
I done played him real good.
He endures for me. There's something about him that still, yeah, despite the movie kind of falling apart in the midway mark, it's something about him. And when he'd come on even later during the stupid scenes, I'd go, well, at least he's there. At least that's going on.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. I don't know. That could just be me.
And I agree with you. It was probably by far the best character in the movie. Also one of the most annoying. When he couldn't get the Pledge of Allegiance right, I'm just gonna murder him. Yeah. I'm gonna come through the screen and murder him because it just went on way too long.
I recorded a bunch of that. They mangled the hell out of that. We'll play that a little bit later. Did Wilford Brimley did he ever wear anything in movies other than overalls, like ever? I guess in The Natural he wore a coach's uniform, but
yeah. You know what? There's a charm to Wilford Brimley, like he just acts because it's something to do. Like, you'd never hear an interview with Wilford Brimley where he comes and says, oh, you know, acting is in my blood. I've always wanted to do this. It's like, oh, somebody pays me to read these lines in front of a camera, and they film like me reading these lines, and so I just do it. If I wasn't doing
like
this,
reluctant actor.
I'd right, be raising exactly. them horses, but longer during the day. And right, there exactly. is a, there. You're right. There's a quality to him that's no nonsense, like screw you. It's funny you guys mentioned the lawnmower movie. What's it called?
The Straight Story.
Mm-hmm. The guy that starred in that old guy.
Yeah,
not right. The Lawnmower Man. It was him and Brimley that were the coaches and assistant coach in The Natural together. Those two guys,
Richard Farnsworth.
Yeah, they were fantastic in that. Dude, The Natural holds up, man.
I haven't seen it.
It's a long time. A long time. All right.
You know. Yeah. I just want to answer your question, Scott. I know it was rhetorical, but Wilford Brimley's best role for me is in The Firm, the John Grisham book movie,
yeah.
The Firm.
Yeah, he's good.
And he actually spends that whole movie wearing a dress shirt and a tie and suspenders.
Oh, well, suspenders, right. That's
and
close.
And he's got, right, exactly. And he's got his overalls underneath that. That's the reason why it's so tight. On
underneath that.
Yeah, that's funny. He's like a never nude. He has to wear those underneath there.
You just referenced Arrested Development. Yeah. I spent the entire part of this film where Clint Howard was coming and going. I spent thinking, how great would this movie have been if it had been made by Ron Howard and Brian Grazer in the style of Arrested Development?
Yeah.
This would have been, I mean,
you'd need Mitch, what's his name, to the creator. What's his name? Mitch. I watch that show all the time. Mitch something. You know who I mean.
Flanagan.
No, the creator of Arrested Development's creator. I can't think of his name. Mitch. Yes. Mitch. Frigger. Whatever it is.
My favorite Brimley, where he's been anything, was Ewoks: The Battle for Endor, where he was actually Ewok.
Shut up.
With overalls.
Shut up. For a second there, I'm thinking, wait, who was he?
And then he did get top billing in that.
To Kashyyyk with Chewbacca for life day.
So hold on, he's really in that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He's like top billed for that.
Hold on a second. For Endor.
Yeah, it's the battle for Endor. Ewoks.
I remember seeing this when I was a kid, but I didn't know he had anything to do with it. Yeah, Wilford Brimley plays Noah.
Right.
Warwick Davis. Wilford Brimley. Paul Gleason. The principal really? From Freaking.
Exactly, yeah.
Breakfast Club.
Breakfast Club, wow. All right, I'm in. Let's watch that now.
Oh, and Tony Cox, wow.
Yeah. Battle for
Endor.
The stuff on IMDb says Kampft.
Is it German? I guess they couldn't get a cover art from anything in the U.S. because it was straight to TV.
The army of the Marauders, led by King Tarek and the witch Charl, attack the Ewoks' village. The parents and the brother of Sindel all die in this attack. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. I'm in.
Let's do it.
What else? I got some of these. There's a lot of these. Old hayseeds have more actual sense than anyone else. That's an old trope, right? Doesn't matter who you are. Rich city folk, educated. You'll be foiled eventually by just the common sense of the diabetes.
Nah, we got it.
Diabetes. Another one. Old man Clinton just loves the railroad. He's this rich, ultra rich chairman of the board, founded his company, used to be a brakeman. And from there, he built an empire. Now his stupid son-in-law took over. And what does he do all day? Sits around in his office with his huge train set.
And the funny thing is, he wasn't even upset that they were shutting down the trains. He didn't get angry until he mentioned planes. And it's like he went all B.A. Baracus on us and was all like, I ain't doing no planes. Mm-hmm. And they came in and shot him up. You know, gave
some nice reference, Brian.
Right.
Yeah, but the way he acted about the change of the company, first of all, was the first time I started thinking, oh, somebody's going to get it. There's no way a rail company overnight switches its entire business model. There's no way. Right. There's just, for starters, the entire movie is predicated on a lie, which is the concept that there has been or should be a decline in rail.
Right.
Rail is very useful, very important set of businesses that ain't going away. And, you know, until something really catastrophic happens, rail is here to stay. It's a very profitable set of businesses, right? Like, people are known for getting paid pretty well. I was a little head scratchy about why these people were all living in trailers and so on.
Plenty of money. They were spending every night in hotels. They were freaking buying beer and meat from the 7-Eleven. I mean, come on.
I got some lunch meat from the 7-Eleven.
Yeah. I'm not eating that.
No. But they were... they were talking about pooling $5 together from each of the boys, and that would somehow get them out of their trouble.
Did they purchase? Was I missing it? Did they actually purchase the 500 gallons of diesel?
I had a question about that too. Like, so this guy's just helping him out because, ooh, you guys are renegades. I'm going to be helping you out.
I think he thought it was cool to help the outlaws, and he gave them the fuel. That's my impression. I don't know. They left it totally open and dangling.
Right.
Like another
open and dangling. That's a big plot point.
But then they finally get to the guy who built the company, and it turns out to be a simpleton, like a real simpleton. I just play with they pay me to come up to this penthouse office and play with my trains and come on.
A little bit of Wizard. You know, we talked about this with Sky Captain in our commentary. There's a little Wizard of Oz going on. Right. You know, you get behind the curtain, and the old guy's just a little doddering fool who's just like them. I miss the old days, right?
Less Leo needs brains.
I did laugh when he says, "Well, sir, if you'll listen to it, we got a plan." And he goes,
"I just wish the biggest mistake in the film for me was when they got to this guy and he's like, what? Planes? I hate planes."
Yes,
instead of saying, "No, I've been around this business and I think it's a mistake for us to completely retool, and I'm going to go I'm going to get to the bottom of this and fix it." Like his only reason for everything that happens the rest of the film is that he hates planes and his son-in-law.
Yeah. That was it.
That was all pretty stupid.
Nonsense.
Let's see what else. I was in Chicago the year this movie set, which is just interesting. I was hanging out there I had a senior trip there, and that was fun.
Did you have some pizza?
I did. Never had better pizza. I also went to, if I told this story, I went to the Second City, right? Because you got to go there and see, you know, whatever improv or whatever. Mm-hmm. Right. And I was a big SNL fan and all that. So I was there, and I had a sketchbook with me. And I had drawn the entire cast, and in that cast was Richard Kind. You guys know that dude.
He's the brother on what was the show with Helen Hunt and Paul Reiser.
Mad About You.
Mad About You.
He was that. He was also on the Michael J. Fox show. What was that? Something City.
Spin City.
He mm-hmm. played, I think, the press secretary or whatever he was. Anyway, great guy, very funny. He's in tons of movies and all kinds of stuff. And he was a voice in Bug's Life, which is the thing I remember him the most from. Anyway, so he's in there, and he accidentally spit on me. It wasn't on purpose, but he's up there jerking around on stage, doing some kind of routine, and just a blob of spit from Richard Kind landed on my shirt. And nice. I wouldn't think that was very significant until later when he became a TV guy.
Shirt again.
There was nobody at the time. But anyway, the cool thing was one of the bartenders or somebody came out and saw the sketchbook and says, "Oh, this is kind of good." I look at it now. It looks like shit. But anyway, I thought it was great. They took it backstage, had the whole cast sign it by the picture of the dude they were supposed to be.
Oh, wow.
And then brought it back. And there's some talk that, not Tina Fey, who was the other one that was before? Well, anyway.
Amy Poehler?
I'd have to go dig it up. No, that would have been later, I think. But anyway, it was a really cool experience. But when I'm watching this movie, there is definitely a weird sense of I was there in the look of it. Like there's something about right. the look of what they filmed that looked like, oh man, I was yeah. standing right there. I've been on those trains, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that was interesting. A little personal note there.
I like that. And hey, you didn't really get run over by any old guys while you're out there near
no,
the train tracks
none,
there?
No? None.
No guys wearing
this,
overalls?
Did you know that this was 5 years
diabetes.
Before Diabetes would go on to do?
Our House?
No. Hard Target.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's only 5 years, you guys.
Right.
That's not a lot of time.
That isn't.
In film years. And look how different that is.
Oh, yeah.
At least it doesn't have to do a dumb voice. Well, at least.
Yeah, no dumber than his normal one, right? No
dumber than his real. Where is this in relationship? The thing was like a couple of years before this, right? 83, 84? 84?
80, yeah, 82.
82. Oh, 82.
Yeah, yeah. That's before. That's when he kept shaving the mustache. He was just a normal dude back then.
I can smell them.
I bet he can always smell his mustache, by the way.
He should never take that mustache off. It should always exist because that thing is so funny. Yeah. I mean, you watch him. And when he eats food, you can't see any of his lips at all. So it's just like his mustache is eating. It's like,
I totally get what you're saying there. Like you made it sound like a joke, but I live a life with a mustache under my nose. And like yesterday I spent some time in a casino and I had to wash my face thoroughly before going to bed or I would have just smelled smoke all night.
Gross. He still does things occasionally, not super busy these days. The last thing he did or the thing he worked on, I guess this year, is something called Mask, and it's a short.
With Cheryl?
He's the mask maker. In 2009, he did something kind of, did you hear about the Morgans? And then it's real spotty. Yeah. Like from 2000 to 2012, there's like maybe 10 projects. But, you know, you got to give the dude some props for, you know, rocking it. And he was born in 34, but just got started. He was a minor role in the original True Grit.
Right.
Was his first film. So anyway.
He's so laid back. It's hard to not like him. He is very laid back and chilled, except when he wanted to kick Kevin Bacon's butt. I'm glad he didn't because later on Kevin Bacon got into a hug fight with Alvin and that was a little uncomfortable. That must have lasted way longer than it should have.
Yeah. His posed shot on IMDb makes me think he really doesn't want to be there. Like there is something about that picture. Where it's like, I can't believe you set this up. This is the stupidest freaking thing. Anyway, Utah connection to the death. Yes. Bruce McGill, he was the son with the freaking body cast on.
Right, I was wondering if he really had that body cast, and they just had to kind of work it into the story.
Like, wouldn't surprise me. Yeah,
he remember him from Time Cop. I just wanted to bring his name up in the show.
He was supposedly God in the very last episode of Quantum Leap.
Oh, really? Bruce McGill?
The bartender that that actually sees Sam as who he really is in the final episode. And
is that confirmed, or is that like one of those lost things where nobody knows for sure?
Well, I mean, it's heavily implied. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Heavily
All right. I haven't seen that in a long time. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, anything else before we do Clippies? Clippies? Clippies?
There was one more trope I felt like we totally missed.
Oh, yeah? Oh,
I know what it was. Give me a trope alert.
All right. Hold on.
My gosh, this film is ham-handed with race relations. And and in just every movie way. It's like watch Major League or just any movie where you have a story that's got nothing to do with race relations, but you just feel like you got to work in the token black guy. And he's gonna be in conflict with someone to show that they're not perfect. You know, Kevin Bacon has flaws, and probably his character's biggest flaw in this film is that he's, you know, doesn't know how to deal with his black friend. And they end up fighting all the time. And there's some point where if you get in enough fights in public, you're gonna go to jail in real life.
Yeah.
You're not gonna get this old woman bartender talking about I will kick you out of here. That is such a trope.
I love that lady though.
it was a fine little thing.
Sure.
Oh my god.
But no, you're right. He did the black dude, the guy from Third Watch, did he even exist for any other reason than to ham fist that? There's no other reason for him to be on.
And it felt like such a B plot line for a sitcom or, you know, for a TV show, like an hour-long TV show. Mm-hmm. You got the main characters going off in the train and then a completely unrelated story about about Kevin Bacon and this guy owing him money.
$500.
If, yeah. If yeah. you took that little subplot and stuck it in the Dukes of Hazzard, I would have never noticed.
Yeah, right.
Of course, because it fits there. But here it was like, no, you guys are wasting time. Like, well, maybe not. Get back to Gerber, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. So we need. Yeah. Right. We need to kill some time. Let's have him teach you how to drive a train, which takes all of about a minute. Oh yeah. You just basically move this up and
push this forward and
obsessed with trains all of his life. Doesn't know how to drive a train. Not buying it.
Congratulations. You're an engineer. Suddenly,
it's actually more difficult to operate the trains in your room in your office at work.
All right. Well, that's all well and good. Let's get to some clips. Here's one about. Oh, there's the hobo almost dying.
You putting there bought the farm, you drunken old son of a bitch.
Yeah, I like this.
You drunken old son of a bitch.
He was actually one of my favorite characters in this movie.
A reference to wives who make bad food for us for lunch.
Rose made me damn deviled egg sandwiches again.
But that sounds delicious. Deviled egg sandwich? I've never heard that phrase until this
movie. So do you take like a bunch of deviled eggs and put them between two pieces of bread?
You guys, this must be a Southern thing because we do eat deviled egg sandwiches down here in the South. And
tell me what you do. What's the difference between that and an egg salad? What's the difference?
Okay, so you boil
eggs. Look it up. I'm right here.
Boil eggs. And you know how you pull the yolks out and then you make a deviling mixture with some, you know, like some mustard and some relish?
Yeah.
Okay, so... that you spread on a piece of bread instead of putting it back in the egg half.
All right,
and then you actually
squish up the egg whites also in it. You mash up everything.
Oh, okay.
No. Well, I'm sorry. The recipe I looked up. You spread the yolk mustard relish mixture on the bread, and then you slice the white, you know, the nice rubbery white boiled egg, and you lay that in like a meat.
This doesn't sound bad.
No, that's way too fancy. I don't know what Southern these are. I don't know if these are like Atlanta Southern
people.
Yeah,
these are Atlantis. Atlanteans.
That's not how we roll.
Yeah.
We just take the whole freaking thing. You take a boiled egg, you mash it up, you put some mayonnaise and some mustard in there, and then you put that on a sandwich.
Yeah,
like
but
you
that's
would,
an egg salad sandwich here in the North.
That's an egg salad sandwich.
Yeah, that's a Yankee thing. Up here, we don't call it deviled egg sandwich, though.
Deviled egg sandwich, that's what we call it. Because you do basically deviled egg, except for you include the egg whites.
Yeah,
That's the same. Right, and relish. So
deviled egg sandwiches, I guess an egg salad sandwich is the same monkey.
You know what? It all kind of sounds really good all of a sudden.
Yeah. It gives me the first squirts.
Oh, really?
Probably better for me than the bucket of chicken that I got hungry eating after we start talking about that.
Oh, you guys and your movie references. Here's another one. Good for you and easy to... Oh, this is the... Yeah.
Peanut butter and jelly. Good for you, easy to make.
I don't know. Maybe he's peanut butter and jelly is a very difficult thing to make, actually. At least it used to be anyway. You have to get out of a jar.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to get a spoon out, you have to get two spoons out, or you have to either that or you have to lick. You got to decide which one. Which one do you go with first? Do you go with the peanut butter or do you go with the jelly first? Because if you go with the peanut butter, it'll stick to the spoon and it'll get in the jelly.
It gets in the jelly. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've been trying to figure out how to make the other part of the statement work, the good for you part. And I've decided if it's going to be peanut butter jelly, it has to have butter made from peanuts. But the jelly part is ambiguous. That could be a spinach jelly or a broccoli jelly or some kind of, I don't know.
Are you living in Atlanta again? I'm telling you.
Carrot onion jelly. Like, I'm trying to make it good for you. He said good for you. It needs to
relative.
Have a, some
wheat,
sort of
wheat bread.
Soy.
If you've got good, what's not generic? What's the word? Organic peanut butter. If you got that,
good organic peanut butter.
And you got jelly that's like homemade preserves or something out of fresh fruit off a tree. And then you got a piece of like 7-grain bread. Yeah, that's.
I'll bet you V8 could make a good healthy jelly if they worked at it.
Well, they probably could. They put a little, I never trust things. Like when V8 came out with like fruit splash drinks and all that, I don't trust that stuff because in my mind, y'all make freaking hot tomato-y things.
It's good. It's good.
It's weird.
Splash stuff?
It's weird.
I like the splash stuff.
Yeah, it's good.
I'm not really
into it. Carrot juice lots of times we use. It's good.
Yeah. That'll give you the
squirts. Scott, you need to try this stuff. It's good stuff.
All right. Well, I also want to try a bucket of chicken. So let's hear Wilford Brimley make reference to that.
Chester, you think you got enough chicken there?
Something I noticed about this movie. I ended up like most of this movie is short little cuts because I just loved all the one-liners. Like
because the dialogue wouldn't last over a sentence. Right?
Yeah, and I quite literally did with the exception of maybe the last two clips. It's all pre hitting the cop car with the train.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's because that's when I kind of went, oh, I'm not recording the rest of this. Like, this is all good up to here, but forget this after this. So here's one about Dominicans and some wisdom from Leo.
El Gonzalez is from Mexico. He ain't no Dominican.
Right?
We could love that guy. Like
that bears an issue.
He ain't no Dominican.
They're talking about betting on baseball and stuff, so whatever.
What's going on? Let's see. Advice for burn trouble?
Throws his valves, was upset all last night. Had the Hershey squirts. We'll tell her to eat plenty of brand flakes.
Okay, first of all, I spelled burn, I meant bum.
Right. And if you already got the Hershey squirts, you don't need more brand.
Right. That seems like the worst advice. Worst advice.
Yeah, you need to have a cheese sandwich.
Ugh.
I had never heard the Hershey squirts either. I actually had to Google this. I had never heard.
You've never heard that?
Really?
Never heard that term? Oh, that's huge up here.
I think they're getting their southern and, you know, northern stuff mixed up.
Got the Hershey squirts.
Well, never heard of it.
This did take place mostly in Arkansas, which is a flavor of the South. It's sort of off to the side of the South.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when something Texas takes in place in Texas, I don't like to hear that it's all Southern. Like for me, the South kind of ends in Louisiana and, you know, and on the other direction ends in South Carolina, and it needs to stay that.
I spent some time in Crawford, Arkansas, and some time in Texarkana, that little corner there where Ross Perot came from.
Love that guy.
Where else? Somewhere else in Arkansas. Oh, there's a town in Arkansas where they have a paper factory, and I forget the name of the town, but beautiful,
stinky town.
Gorgeous town you've ever seen. I mean, really pretty, just beautiful all year, wonderful little place, kind of village-like, but it smelled like a dead horse everywhere you went. Yeah,
paper mills are horrible.
Horrible. Paper mills stink. Ugh. That's the worst thing in the South.
I think there's some great vacation country in Arkansas, like from Hot Springs on up to Eureka.
Mm-hmm.
Just beautiful country. Hot Springs in particular, where you can go stay in a bed and breakfast and actually get in a hot spring. That is just awesome.
Yeah, we should go borrow a train and make a trip.
And go there.
Oh, Wayne, did you put finger quotes up when you said borrow?
I did.
Yes.
Okay.
Let's borrow a train and see if anyone notices.
Don't tell Sheriff Cletus where the hell that guy was.
Don't tell our wives.
Yeah, don't tell
them. Oh, that's the worst. Yeah, don't tell our wives. The thing I was most worried about was getting back and telling our wives.
I love how they put on their Sunday best to go talk to that cop. That was great. That's a Southern. You know what? Take that, Southern tropes.
Yeah,
right. Totally.
Southerners get Sunday best for everything they got to do.
Mm.
All right. You want to go bird hunting?
Want to go bird hunting this weekend?
Oh. Going hoggling.
Again, I just like them to say things. I'm fine with it. All right, here's your steam burgeon talking about what she dreams about.
I've been dreaming about salmon patties all day long.
They went on for like 10 minutes talking about those salmon patties before they revealed it.
Is that a big deal down there?
Oh, dude, yeah. Salmon patties all the time, man. Absolutely.
Are they ground up? Are they ground up or are they actual fillets? What do you do there?
Oh, we just mash them up. You got to put it in a bowl and mash it up.
Oh, salmon, fish? Weird.
Fish.
You dream about it, though? Like,
I don't dream about it.
I've had many a salmon patty. Don't get me wrong. That's a good eating.
How do you make
good
put eggs in there? What do you...
Oh, you know, you get salmon meat and some peppers and onions, and you mash that all together and put a little panko breading on the outside, fry it in a grill.
Sounds like Atlanta to me.
Yeah,
me dreaming about it all day long.
Yeah, that sounds pretty
good. That's nowhere near what we do.
Imagine these words, though. Let's try this again. Hold on.
I've been dreaming about
Ted Danson all night long.
Ted Danson all day. Can't wait to smash up in some egg batter.
Here's some Holly Hunter time to spend.
There's a guy who works on the oil rigs. They get paid a lot more than railroad.
Don't be dumb, son. Them oil rigs come and go.
Don't be dumb, son.
Yeah, they do.
I can smell them.
I just want to argue.
Okay.
I worked in the oil patch for years, and I'm telling you, and I'm not joking like I do at the beginning of the film. I actually worked out there, and there are some grunts that get paid good money, but not like working on the railroad. You'd much rather work for a railroad company than an oil company.
It's like they were establishing their own reality because nobody else in the country would have any idea if any of this stuff was true. And so they just, that's kind of like CSI. Idea. It's like, how many of you are going to know anything about forensic, you know, science?
Right. Who can afford the equipment in CSI?
Nobody, speaking to Ted Danson. Nobody.
Right.
That's the answer. All right. Oh, I like this line.
Caucasianness, my friend.
That's the stupidest.
Come back. No, you're a bar drinker guy.
What the hell?
Caucasian this. That's the guy, by the way, if the voice should give it away, but here.
Caucasianness, my friend.
That guy's from Third Watch. He played a paramedic, and he was really good on that show. I don't know if people remember Third Watch. I love that
show.
Yeah, I remember.
It was great.
Mm-hmm.
Good. All right. The Pledge. What? I don't remember this.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. This is the thing. Okay. So he's. Oh, man. Yeah, I'll just play it.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of these United States of America. And there's a little more there.
Yeah. Something in there about God, I think.
Amen. That's important.
Okay. Here's. As weird as that is, here's my biggest problem with that. That's so. Everybody in the South knows the Pledge of Allegiance.
You're indoctrinated with it. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
The thing that I did like about that whole, all those scenes is it seemed very improv-y. I don't know if they scripted
totally
any of that.
Totally did. Yes. Yep.
But I think that was a lot of improv there.
There's a little more there.
A little more there.
You think
something
so?
Something about God in that part, I think.
Amen.
I'd almost question whether they knew they were being filmed and times like that.
They were just talking.
Yeah, maybe like it's such a powerful performance where you start to forget that he's an actor playing a role and you start to feel like he's just a simple dude.
I love that when that happens in movies. And there were a couple times in this movie where he kind of felt like that. And then they hit the car. old lady. Oh yeah, this is great in the bar.
Okay, you cut this shit out or I'll throw your ass outside and call the police.
How many times I've heard that in real life?
That's great.
Holy.
Here's Kevin Bacon losing it. He's kind of losing his poop over here.
Hey, I looked for your daddy, baby. I couldn't find him.
Yeah, I looked for him, baby.
I think he really was asleep when she woke him up, beating the shit out of him.
Yeah. It's the Tremors, and it is the Tremors, Kevin Bacon, too. You know?
Sure. Yeah. In fact, every minute of this, I was going, every time he was on screen, I'm like, Tremors, what are you doing? And that wasn't for another, what was that, 89, 90? 90.
Yeah.
90, yeah.
So he still had a couple of years left, and I'm sure somebody who made Tremors went, you know, he was pretty good in that End of the Line movie.
Did you do that? But did you do that End of the Line voice for my Tremors movie?
Can we agree, though, like, if you had to sit down and watch a film right now, you'd so much rather watch Tremors than End of the Line.
Yeah, it's a better movie. No, I don't know about Tremors 2 or 3, but sure.
In fact, I have to say, Tremors is probably the first film I would like to see film sack twice.
Oh wow, two sacks!
Really?
That's crazy.
I have a hard. I can make a case for Tremors being the first two sacker.
All right. We'll have a trial, and you can argue the the point. Kevin Bacon's career is on the line. You can argue for it. Ibbot, you can take the prosecution.
I'll take the yes, sure.
Your Honor, that movie was shit. I rest my case.
We did it. The defense rests.
All right. How about Angry Holly Hunter?
Shut up, Evan!
All right.
That was so fun.
Yeah.
Shut up, Evan!
Listen to that.
Oh, my gosh.
What was that? Oh, that was when she was beating him up in the car?
Yeah.
Yeah, pulled him out. Yeah, Alvin went to say something to rebuttal. Yeah, not a good idea.
Tore him up. Alvin was the black dude, right?
Right, okay. Right.
Yeah.
Jeez, take it easy on
the
brother.
That could almost go in the Scream file.
I know. Nice. That's pretty good. That's some angry acting right there. Here's Mr. Gerber as he's introduced, and that's when we knew we were in trouble.
I thought you guys understood what we were. I mean, right now, Southland has a bad public image because of all the people we laid off. We want to have a good public. This commercial gives us a bad public image.
Mr. Gerber.
Okay, here's the problem. Here's the problem. That voice changed throughout the movies, first of
it
all.
Did.
So it flopped around. It was like Princess Leia trying to be half British in Star Wars. And it kept changing. But why that affectation? Like, why so over the top, cartoony? You know, I felt like I don't know what I was watching.
Yeah,
like a Mel Brooks movie
too.
Or something, you know?
I tried to figure it out too. Is it juxtaposition of Southern versus a Northern type of thing? I couldn't quite figure it out because it seems very Northern.
It's to sucker you in that, all right, oh, he's a nice guy. He's going to help these guys out, you know, but then you realize, all right, he's just kind of a doofus
who doesn't
know what he's doing.
Yeah. And he's that old trope where we talked about it a little bit, but specifically it's this old trope of it's somebody's son-in-law that took over the company.
Right.
It isn't just, it's not some guy that moved up the ranks. It's my daughter married this dweeb and I made him head of the company. And I don't think that ever really happens. Like, that's just not a real thing.
To be a common movie trope like this, it must be something that has happened and probably famously. It must be.
I mean, nepotism's a real thing, but I can't think of any significant. Well, I mean, I don't know. Who knows who anyone is in business, you know, if they disclose it or not. But I can't think of anywhere it's like the son-in-law. Lots of sons, you know, will come in. So you're a lot, you know, Roy Disney doing a lot of what Walt did.
I'm just saying, Scott, you know the fear. You have that fear that your daughter's going to marry Bob Balaban and
right?
He's going to take over Frog Pants.
Yeah. Oh, man. Help me, everybody.
Gerber.
I'll have to yell that when it happens. As soon as I see the kid.
I tried Gerber. To go here.
You know, I think we should just throw the whole thing away and get into building monkeys out of sand. Because that's basically what he did. He came in and said, yeah, this huge railroad thing. We're now just going to be pure flight. We're done. We're out. Lay everybody off. Randy's right. That's
totally
terrible.
Different businesses.
Right. It's like saying McDonald's is getting into the travel agency business and we're doing it today and we're just firing everybody and all the franchises are stopping.
That was so strange. Like they both have their place in transportation and will continue to.
Yeah.
You know, trains because of so much heavy cargo in the world. The main thing trains transport in North America is coal, and you can't move coal any other way. There's just there's no alternative.
Yeah, you're not going to load up a plane.
A plane with coal. Wow.
I mean, I guess you could. You could build huge, you know, cargo planes that do nothing but carry coal, but that's not efficient. It's not cost efficient. Just dumb. Yeah. Can you imagine a giant coal plane crashing someplace?
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
And by the way, Taylor, if you're listening, don't marry Bob Balaban.
No, don't do that.
I'm doing a little Googling here, and it looks like this happens a lot in inheritance of businesses over time. Looks like most like the son-in-laws are usually like the third generation, or maybe like a son has a daughter or something, and then it's inherited. But it looks like it happened in Mars.
Oh, the Mars Bars people.
Oh, really? The M&M Mars.
No. I'm doing some reading still, but
well, Hershey's like all they suck now. Maybe that's why. Maybe they got people who are stupid sons-in-laws because Hershey's used to be good. Now that chocolate is just crap. Mm-hmm. It's just
Hershey's like used to Hershey's. Be good, huh?
Way back in the day?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Yeah, it's early days.
When you were a kid.
Well, no, I mean
had no discriminating palate.
Like before me, I mean. Like way before any of us. Like I'm talking like when Hershey's was founded in Pennsylvania. Or was it Pennsylvania? I'm just thinking of Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Yes, that's
where it's from? All right. that was all like from the old country. And then it all went to mass production and went to poop. But somehow I can go to Europe and get amazing chocolate anywhere all the time. Their standards are so much higher for the chocolate over there. I don't understand what's wrong with us as a nation. What's going on?
Is it the milk chocolate that you don't like? Is it a darker chocolate?
No, I love milk chocolate. I love the milk. I just want good chocolate, period.
You always have to remind yourself at a time like this when you say, oh, you can go to Europe and get this amazing chocolate, or you can go to the Far East and get such incredible fish. Just remember, nowhere else in the world does steak.
Yeah. Like,
go to England and get a steak and it will ruin your life.
You know, you got to remember that it's according to where you buy. If you're buying chocolate at Costco, probably not going to be the best chocolate. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you go to somewhere overseas, they don't stockpile stuff like we do.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to junk food and that might be the problem.
That's true. I'm sure that's part of it.
Cuz I went to Hershey's I guess about 6 years ago, maybe longer than that, and we got it right there in town. It was delicious.
The best steak I ever had though was in Japan. I had that Kobe beef stuff, and it was amazing.
Oh yeah,
and then I had a really good one in Hong Kong, which was just a normal Ruth Chris place, but that's like an American import thing. So you're right. So all right, take that world. We got steak.
We got pork ribs.
Okay. We got pork ribs.
Salad sandwiches.
We got steamburgeon. We got a big smelly steamburgeon ready to go. So take
and
that.
And where else can you steal a train and nobody will care?
Right.
Come to America.
That's
that should have been the story, is that nobody cared. And they should have ended up, seriously, they should have ended up getting to Chicago and finding out nobody cared, would see them care. Why don't you boys just take that train on home? And then dejected, turn around and have to just go home.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, by the way, because we have so much steak here in the States, we also have a whole lot of
diabetes.
All right, moving on.
Right.
Let's move on.
Almost done here. Let's see. I already did Gerber, didn't I?
Gerber.
Yeah, I did Gerber. How about, let's see. Oh, this is a funny line from the end of the movie where we find out how he's going to screw Gerber. And here it is.
Because I bought the whole shittery from Tom here for $1.
I love how the cop just loses it. But better than that is, what is the shittery, man?
I love it.
I bought the whole shittery from Bob here. That's awesome. That was great. Is that a Southern thing, Brian?
I have never heard the term, and I love it. Now I'd say it every day.
All right. What happened to the dishes? I dumped the whole shittery out on the floor. Let's do it. Let's find places to use it in our lives.
Right.
That's
I'm
it.
Go down to the shitteria and wash.
I don't even
clothes.
Think it's a swear. I don't even think it's a swear at all.
It's not. Yeah. Well, it's like shit gratifter. You can say that.
I think I'm.
You
can
say that
kids.
To your preacher on Sunday.
Yeah.
Shit gratifter.
See, it's not offensive. That's fine. Let's do awards. Time for awards. Film Sack awards for this week's film are as follows. The Hey, This Part Is Just Like My Part in Tremors award goes to Kevin Bacon. I wrote that before Randy said so. The 89 cent burger is still an incredible deal award, even in 1987. It's a good deal. Go get that.
Delicious.
The Why You Gotta Kick a Brother Out of the Car award. That was a close, tight race, but they won. And then also, let's see. And they, sorry. And the Hey, We Ain't Got No Money to Show. What? Sorry. We ain't got no money to show you run through the police car, so we're just going to make the sound of it off scene award.
Right.
Also, something we talked about earlier in the day. And also, Star Trek references. Clint Howard. That's it.
Clint Howard.
Obvious.
There's nobody else. That's all that was in anything.
This film.
I'm sure Wilford Brimley wasn't in Star Trek.
Nope. Not a
I
single
Trek. I can't believe McGill hasn't been, you know? He seems like he'd be a great Trek character.
Yeah, he'd be
Don't
good.
You get the feeling that Wilford Brimley never went to Hollywood? Like, you kind of got to go to Hollywood to be on Star Trek.
Right. You know, every time we get a Star Trek connection, I always think, is there someone I missed that sat down with Whoopi Goldberg one time in one of those conversations, and that's where they're at? Because I always imagine that's where they are.
I wish there had been more of that. I wish that the next generation had just gone all the way into subplots where she's just sitting around in 10 forward talking to random guest stars.
Exactly. Like Love Boat. Like,
so combine the Whoopi Goldberg talk show with Star Trek Next Generation.
Yeah.
You know what? We were wrong. Daryl, shame on you. And Brian, you nailed it. Bruce McGill was in an episode of Voyager.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I remember that episode.
Yeah. It sounded really familiar and I couldn't let it slip because
I immediately lift the shame from Daryl. Poor guy, man.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Clint Howard is definitely the deal.
He's the shining example. But yeah, Bruce Gill. And you're right, he was in Quantum Leap as Al the bartender. Mm-hmm. All right. What else? Where am I here now? Oh, yeah, soundtrack grade. I'd say great in the country, terrible in the city.
Yeah. So typical.
Yeah. Right.
Appropriate when they were in Arkansas, dumb as hell when they got to Chicago. Just dumb. I don't even know how to describe it. It was like music made out of...
There was a little good scoring while they were on the road. I've had the feeling it was bought from another film. Like they just bought some scoring, some film.
Sounds of Chicago.
But when you got to Chicago, it was just... Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun Just like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Twitter post time. That's where you guys sum it up in 140 characters. Les, let's start with Randy. What do you got?
End the line. Just an old-timey movie about the lengths that lazy people will go to get out of feeding the dogs. Poor dogs.
The unsung heroes of End of the Line. Brian Dunaway.
Brimley and Bacon bring this heartfelt, depressing-ass classic about trains and idiots to the insert movie title here. Oh, End of the Line.
Also, did you guys do the thing where when the movie says their own name, you yell or drink or do whatever you do? I did. He goes, this is the end of the line. He goes, we're done. We're home. End of the line. I went, woo! And there was nobody here when I did it.
None.
You didn't watch it with anybody?
No.
They all left.
Just me. Who else here? Oh, Brian Ibbett.
Oh. The end of the line. Wilford Brimley and Levon Helm steal a train and take it to Chicago and park it to cook some lunch meat and shoot each other. And somehow buy 500 gallons of diesel fuel. Maybe cheaper to fly?
Right?
Ooh.
Ooh, now there's an idea. Fly to Chicago.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Well, here's what I learned. Well, you made a cool, fake, old-timey black and white intro movie.
Oh, yeah.
The oldest bartender ladies live in Arkansas. That's a truth.
Right.
Hey, let's get drunk and shoot a train.
Oh, yes.
Never right. trust a third watch paramedic to pay his debts. And finally, nothing Sorry. Creepier than three old dudes in a stolen train singing a song. And that's what I learned. Well, you made your dumb video. let's get to some emails. We've got a couple of them from one's from E. Bagley. Ed Bagley.
Ooh, Ed Bagley. Oh,
not true. Junior? It's actually Earl Bagley is his name. So sorry.
Oh.
He says, Film Sackers, longtime listener, first time caller, looking over the goodness that is Film Sack. I'm stunned that none of your flicks have starred Linda Blair, the hardest working right? actress in Hollywood. They've never been sacked. Thus, I offer up the 1979 classic Roller Boogie. Blair plays a privileged daughter of uptight Beverly Hills parents with the dream of winning a Venice Beach roller disco competition. Imagine a mashup of Xanadu versus Roll Bounce with the good parts and with the good parts and plot removed. That is Roller Boogie. Free Linda and add Roller Boogie to the Film Sack list, says Earl Bagley.
I'll tell you, we came really, really close. We almost watched The Exorcist, and it got squeezed out of our schedule last year.
Mm.
I think that's the Linda Blair film for Film Sack.
I'm scared of that movie.
Now that we know about Roller Boogie, though.
Yeah, that right. would be. I think I could do that. Does her head spin mm-hmm. and she barf up peas? Or that isn't.
Yeah,
every movie. Yeah, it's her. It's her. I'll be back. Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's like Arnold. Oh, I got it.
I love this cover box.
One more.
It's very nice.
One more email. We'll put it on our list. See if we can get it. If it's streaming, even the better.
It is. There it is right now.
You know, Xanadu is still streaming.
ELO, dude.
Yeah.
Let's watch that. Thomas. I wonder how much I'll remember Xanadu. Because my sisters watched it incessantly when I was growing up. So I just don't know how much I'll retain. Anyway, Thomas wrote in and says, hey, guys, love the show. You guys were talking about making yourself pass out when we were kids. And it reminded me of when I was a dumb teenager and we would do things like that. We would lean up against the wall and hold our breath and someone would really push hard on our chest and we would pass out and fall on the floor. Now that I think of it, was real dumb. By the way, there's a website that has nothing but bacon products that taste and smell like bacon. Keep up the great show. I don't know if he's referring to Kevin Bacon or not, but that's why I put this one in.
Yeah. I'm like, when did we talk about this?
There was a couple episodes ago. We were talking about how you'd hold your breath when you were a kid and do stupid crap. But I don't remember what...
Hold my breath there.
Yeah, where
time.
It came from. Like what?
Yeah, what the context was. I don't know. Yeah. It would have been... let's think for a second. It wasn't our last one. It would have been like...
Sky Captain.
Could have been Hard Target. I don't know. Nobody held their breath.
Been.
I don't remember.
I don't like holding my breath.
I don't either. It's not cool.
No.
I like to do it, kids. My body wants to do it.
On my list of top 10 ways I don't want to die, drowning's right up there.
Oh, mm-hmm. Totally.
Like two or three?
Sure.
Burning's number one. Don't want to burn to death. Mm. Two is probably drowning. Three.
Burning while drowning? That would suck.
Roseanne Barr sitting on my head. That's number three. And that's it. Those are my three ways I don't want to die.
Rest of them.
Falling chairlift gondola is right up there on my
that
list.
That one's pretty bad. Wait, what about a big like tram full of people? How about that?
Being in them or having that land on
having
me?
Having you be in it and be like 300 what? Feet up in Aspen or something. And
I don't care if I'm alone or if there's a big group of people. It's up on the list.
For me, it's worse if there's a bunch of people. Because they're panicking and screaming, and that's
yeah. You like to die quietly.
I want to die quietly alone.
Right.
Yeah. I want to fall in my gondola by myself.
Right. Sleep at the wheel.
Oh, sleep at the wheel's bad. That's
Why?
A bad one. Because you'll wake.
No, sleep at the wheel's great.
No,
you won't wake up.
But
you might wake up at the very last second. Ah! The worst part.
All right. Okay. So, what's the best? What give me your best way other than just falling asleep and at 95 on the couch and peacefully nodding off?
That's the ideal way.
That's the best way. But what's the like but outside of that? Like, if you had to go today, and we're all too young to go, but let's say we just had to, what would you take? What would you want?
I'm going to have to go with decapitation because it's quick and over.
It just sucks for everyone who had to see it, but yeah.
Exactly. No, too bad that's for you.
Not,
I'm
that's
out.
Not the worst for other people. The worst is like in Expendables where Mickey Rourke says he wants to die making love to a woman. Mm. Hey, have some you know, respect for the life of that poor woman. Right. Can you imagine the rest of her life?
I know, especially when Mickey Rourke died
on
you.
I'm going to say, Mickey Rourke be bad enough.
It's just evil.
The undead guy. That's horrible.
All right, so that's the Dave way I call it from that movie, yeah. Dave. All right, Randy, how do you want to, did you say yet? How do you want to die?
Making love to, oh, no, wait.
Making love to a woman who dies at the same time.
Same exact instant. We're gonna be like 87, 88 years old.
I think it would be Grand Canyon giant leap. Just a huge jump.
That's no, really?
Sheer terror going out.
Yeah. How long? Oh,
it is, but it isn't. Because you're not going to. Decapitation, for example, is just. It's messy business. And I'm not even sure, Brian, that your brain doesn't still go, oh my gosh, my head.
You don't have to clean it up, though.
Well, okay. But the desert one, just the coyotes can take me. Like, it doesn't matter down there.
You are describing the worst, like, drawn-out, most painful ways to die.
But that's not painful.
How many seconds of horror are you going to have as you're jumping down into the Grand Canyon?
I guess if
oh,
I'm...
Oh, hit a rock on the way down. Oh, pain and...
the way I'd see it is, okay, well, assuming there's no rocks on the way down, okay?
Drowning is starting to sound a lot better.
That's a caveat. I just want to... If I know I'm going to go, the ride down sounds like I could enjoy it.
No, the ride down is where you would change your mind, Scott, and it would be like the worst instant of fear and doubt ever. Like,
I don't think you've thought this through.
Maybe not. Maybe not. And then some people survive those, you know?
Right. Yeah.
That's bad.
Terrible pain and
stupid terminal velocity.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the decapitation, other than dying in your sleep, I think that decapitation is the way to go because, you know, you're not going to be, oh, well, yes, I'm decapitated, but I'm still alive, I'm going to suffer the rest of my life.
You can't scream, so hey, that's good. You can't really.
Yeah, but your head is knowing. No. Your head knows. Like for a couple of minutes, your head's going, oh, this is the worst thing I've ever been through.
The worst part of it is the big, huge adrenaline
drush.
The big, huge adrenaline rush that you get. That's got to be, that's the worst. Your brain didn't get any. So your brain's just like, whatever.
No, it isn't. I don't think so. I am 100% convinced that if you get your head cut off, your head sits there for about 30 seconds going, this is the worst thing that ever happened to me. And it hurts. I'll bet it hurts.
It's like, what could hurt?
And you
what
can't do hurt? Anything. They always have well, in the movies.
The only thing that's attached to your brain now is your neck. The only thing you got to, only pain you have to worry about is in your face.
What, from where the head fell and whacked on
a
rock or something?
That's the worst.
All right. Okay.
I think I'm going to go, I'm seriously answering this question, I'm going to go with painkiller overdose.
All right. That's fair.
Go to sleep. Let's go to sleep.
Or a chemical one. Yeah, that'd be all right. Yeah. But, I got a perfect combination. Get a guillotine up on the Grand Canyon. Slice my head off, and then my head can still have that 30-second thrill ride.
That's really something. I need you to draw that, Scott. Could you illustrate the guillotine on the canyon's edge and Scott's head falling off into the abyss?
The abyss for 30 seconds going, what have I done?
Terrible idea.
I can't feel my feet. Yeah. All right. That's it for the show. I don't know why we did that at the end, but enjoy.
I know why, because I was thinking the same thing when I was watching that movie.
Well, that's good.
It'll be the easiest way to end this.
Next week, next episode of the Film Sack, Season of the Witch, a relatively recent, maybe our most recent film. Right?
I think so. I think this is after Expendables.
Yeah. I think that's right. Season of the Witch, we're going to finally get our Nicolas Cage on. Took us, 3 years or whatever to do this. So, holy crap, it's about time. Season of the Witch, streaming on Netflix, available on Film Sack next time we do this show, episode 120. It's going to do it, folks. Everybody join us on the website, if you will, filmsack.com. Email us. We love your feedback. Love reading him on the show and like him just in general, filmsack@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @filmsack, and you can leave us a review on iTunes if you so desire. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian. For Brian and for Randy.
Yeah.
We'll see you next time.
Yeah. Fish squirts.
Leonard, you darn sling blade talking fool.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.